Yeah, you see it on your end?
It says recording.
Cool. All right, we'll go in 3, 2, 1. Welcome back, podcast patrons. Another episode of Leave the Pin Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Dan. I'm my co-host, Scott. And Scott, this is our first episode on the Golfer Gang Network. We have joined a gang. So what does one do when one gets initiated into a gang? We got to talk about our favorite gang activities. Do you have one, Scott?
I would probably go with looting, which here's my thing. I love looking at golf stuff. I'm off all week. I went to the PGA store and Golf Galaxy in Paramus, New Jersey yesterday. Didn't spend any money, walked around for a couple hours and had the best time of my life. Now, here's my thing. If I could just start grabbing stuff, that's a win. So I would say looting is my favorite gang activity.
Well, now that you are in a gang, Scott, officially, I believe that you have the rights and ability to do such.
Fair enough.
Thank you for asking, Scott. This is a very polite gang. If you haven't picked up on it yet, maybe we might need to change that. You know what I mean? Boost our street cred a little bit. My favorite gang activity would be money laundering.
Okay.
Yeah, I like to take it as the kind of like the white collar crime. I want to own a golf course and launder money through said golf course, because as we know, most municipal golf courses lose money anyway. So you can kind of always be in the red, and no one ever says anything.
So my wife Jen, she is a money laundering expert. Because
would she help us? Like, can she be a gang member by proxy?
Pretty much. So what I was about to say there is, to be an anti-money laundering expert, they basically teach you how to launder money.
Yes.
And the
just like hackers become the greatest cybersecurity.
Oh, I got a story for that later. But the two biggest businesses to launder money through.
Go ahead. I'm writing notes down.
Golf driving ranges.
Done. I have expertise in that.
And car washes.
You know, the mob owns a lot of car washes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So laundromats are also up there. Anything that there's like a high volume of cash that comes through.
Yes.
But there's no real record of it.
Yes.
Basically anything that's automated. So.
So we need to basically have just an honor system Dropbox, or like a toll booth gate that opens, that people put cash in or credit. It opens, allows them on the course. We don't have to be there. We don't know. Scott, I can't keep track of how many people are on the course.
Here's the thing. If I'm like the people who own Indian Mountain, I'm never collecting credit cards. I'm just letting people go out there. They can pay what they want. And I'm just claiming a loss.
Love it. Love it. Claim
a
loss.
That's my story.
Good. Claim a loss. Got it. No credit cards. Got it. Taking notes. So we're officially in Golfer Gang Network. It's cool. We got a nice little.
Is there like a hand signal I need to know, or?
Yeah, I'm gonna teach you later. I can't show everyone online.
Like a little like.
Obviously, everybody. Yeah. Yes, it is. Lucky. Sometimes we take the bits way too far. This one's gonna be around for a while. I feel like this is like replacing the DJ bit that we had going for.
He's too busy counting his Saudi oil money.
Oh, good Lord. All right, let's hit some things, Scott, as we kind of wrap around and yet again, once again, come back from hiatus. I can't even. I'm sure this is amazing audio. I can't even stop laughing because it's just such our MO. It's unreal.
If you expected us to do this regularly, you're expecting too much.
I'm just gonna
no. Okay.
Oh, I was on the Fairways and Dreams podcast, and Jeff, the host, asked me, he says, why do you guys think you're so successful? I said, I don't freaking know. I have no clue. I said, but all I know is we've always just been ourselves. You know, we've never tried to conform to anything. And so if you truly believe that we're going to set a schedule and say every Thursday a pod's coming out, like, you don't know us. We might disappear off the face of the earth for 6 months and then come back and hit you with 100 episodes. Who knows?
Exactly. We're the Tiger Woods of golf podcasts. We show up when we feel like it, do our thing, and then leave for a little while and come back again when we feel like it.
Yeah. You know, maybe we fall down a flight of stairs and blame it on a jet ski incident. Who knows, you know? Could have been high on coke. Not us. Someone else, though.
Yeah. I mean, now that we're in a gang.
Yeah, it's cool. All right, Scott, what's going on in the golf world? So we got on the Anwar going on right now, the Augusta National Women's Amateur. That's dope. That literally is the start now of Masters season. It's officially golf season almost anywhere. The USGA has opened up their gin handicap scoring purposes in the Northeast and 14 other states. And, you know, you got almost the entire country is open right now for posting. You were going to play today. The weather's been awful. This is, you know, first world problems, a little bit behind the scenes here. You know, I just got booted off for 30 minutes. My internet went down. Pissed about it, complain about it, but it's bound to happen from time to time. It's here, Scott. Like golf is finally arrived in the Northeast. Now I say that, and it is literally raining upside down and sideways at both of our houses right now. But I actually got out and I've played two new courses, new to me, that I've never played before, both out in the middle of the state, Harrisburg, Carlisle Barracks, and Range End Golf Course. And obviously they were both because Leiden had tournaments out that way. We're going to be spending a lot of time out in the middle of the state. They have a very strong national golf tour out there. Nothing by us, of course. We live in the middle of nowhere, just the sticks.
But, Carlisle Barracks. Was it like an Air Force base at one point?
No. Well, so it's Army. It's Army.
Okay.
And it's actually the U.S. Army College where military historians study to then work at the other various military bases to collect artifacts, et cetera, you know, document detail, the comings and goings of the forces, you know, the military space force of, I don't know where the hell they're located, but you know, the four major ones,
right.
Army, Marines, Navy, and Air Force. And then I guess the Coast Guard might do something as well with it, and the Space Force, if you will. But very cool. We went to the Military Museum there, which the college runs. And the golf course, what I was told, because we played on about a 40-mile-an-hour wind day. It was about 40 degrees, 40-mile-an-hour winds. And the guy was like, yeah, dude, we're open. He's like, but nobody's out there. He goes, if you pay me for nine, he goes, you can play as much as you want. The first day of our tournament got canceled, so we banged that out, played 18. He actually ended up winning the next day, which was phenomenal. But this course was so much fun, and a bunch of kids that he played with in the tournament, it was their home course for the high school. And I was just like, man, like, you guys are so, so lucky to have this as your home course. Nice variety of holes, some long, some short. Tricky greens, big greens, small greens, pretty quick, really, really good shape. And like at high point in the season, it's like $35 to ride, like a steal. You know, you could walk it for 20. I think we paid $15 each, you know, and then we bought I got a quarter tip there or something. It was super nice, but real cool. And what they told me is that was built because all the military higher ups that come in when they do addresses at the War College or when they're there as honored guests, go out and play this course all the time. And what's crazy, Scott, between the first and the 18th hole is a helicopter landing pad for those guys to come right in.
So my boss at work is he's either a full colonel or like a general in the Army Reserve or the Army National Guard.
Mm-hmm.
And he has like a helicopter at his like disposal, like at his beck and call, essentially. So if he needs to like helicopter out to like wherever,
right,
he can just snap his fingers and helicopter comes and picks him up.
I highly recommend he takes you out to that course there.
He did do some work at the War College at one point, so not a golfer though, but I will definitely bring that up.
Yeah, it's it was a neat thing, and honestly, I never knew it existed. We've passed off of that road before, and they've got a bunch of tanks and Apache helicopters out there, and I always thought it was one of those things where it's like some kooky guy bought, you know, a tank and dressed it up in war dressage and whatnot, but actually, they have about a mile and a half walking military trail off of the museum that you can go and check out. So we did that the one day. You know, it was pouring out, but it was cool. It was very neat.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Did you see that JT and Bones parted ways?
I saw that this morning.
Yeah. Care about that?
I mean, Bones is kind of unretired from being retired.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I don't either. People are making it a big story, and you know, I've got a bunch of friends, as you know, that are caddies out on tour, and you know, their number one rule is I never get too comfortable because I know at some point I'm going to get fired. I'm a caddy, I'm going to get fired. So like that's like telling me that, you know, I breathe air. Okay, I get it. I do.
Here's what I'll give you two reasons why I don't care.
Yeah.
Reason number one is if Bones wants another job, he'll have one tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. Might already have one already.
Reason number two, the only reason anyone even knows this happened is because he's, I would arguably say, the most recognizable caddy.
Yeah, I'd give you that for sure.
And
one of.
Arguably one of the most recognizable players.
Yeah, I think so.
And you know what? My guess is there's at least one other caddy that got fired this week, or at least lost his bag.
Yeah, that we didn't hear of.
That we just didn't hear about.
Well, look at like Alejandro Tosti's been through six caddies and seven events already. You know, we don't know their names,
right?
And quite honestly, if it wasn't JT, I mean, for JT, all we know is his name. It's not like he's playing well.
No,
at least compared to the JT of old. So yeah,
it's his turn. Because now Spieth is playing better and Fowler's playing a little bit better. So now it's his turn to be down.
Yeah. Pinehurst number 10 officially opened today. It's what is today? Wednesday, April 3rd. They did some preview play. I had some friends down there that played it. Officially opened today. Very cool. You know, anytime you're going to get a new course at one of the biggest, if not best resorts in the U.S., that's a special thing. It looks awesome. They actually, Scott, I'm going to give people behind-the-scenes things here. A lot of people online DM me, and they say, how do you know all these people? I don't know. No idea. Don't ask me how I know them. Just happen to know them. Swag Golf, as people know, is a golf company that drops very limited releases, high resale price. You know, you can flip a putter cover for, you know, 3x the amount in 30 minutes and make yourself, you know, a few hundred bucks. So Pinehurst number 10 paired up with Swag Golf, which I've come to see in the last few months has been doing stuff with courses, which I think is a great business model for them. And you can only get it at the course. The Swag Golf teams up with Pinehurst to release a very limited edition number 10 Pinehurst driver head cover, only available at the course. I had an individual reach out to me and said, I know this is something you would be interested in. We're going to drop a few online. They are going to sell out fast. Do you want one? I said, yes, I do. You know how in life, like sometimes there's things where, like we're going to talk about the Masters a little bit. People can see your little heading right. That says not a fan of pimento cheese. You know how, like, if someone said to you, hey, I'm going to the Masters tomorrow, can you come? Like, you just don't say no. You just say, yeah, I can. I'm going to make it work, right?
The last time that happened, which it did happen, I had a one-month-old baby.
That is correct. And you went to the Masters, Scott, in 2013. We'll get to that. You know, it's kind of one of those things. They say, we'll send you a private link. You can order off that link. Do you want one? Yes. I don't. Whatever. What it costs is what it costs. Like, I want this. You know what I mean? So they sent me a private link after everything had sold out online, and I got myself one, which is very cool. Plus I picked up a very cool spring cradle, which I think people can see right here. That's the flag for it. I've had that flag for a little bit. Picked up the spring cradle logo long sleeve tee as well, because why order one thing right, and have to pay shipping when you can order two things and pay shipping. That's the way my mind works.
I mean, if you're going to pay for shipping, you might as well get as much as you can. It's like if you're looting.
Yeah, if right, and basically, I'm only money laundering as well, if you will.
True.
Keep that on the low for now. So that's cool. So I'm hoping to play that probably in November when I go down there for Thanksgiving. But you know, another new course down there looks brilliant. And Scott, have you noticed, like, as of late, you know, 5-6 years ago, there was the demise of golf. You know, well, guess what? COVID's 4 years ago. Yeah, so about 8 years ago, 10 years ago, we really kind of had the demise of golf, and then COVID obviously had this big boom. But courses were closing all over the place. There's an Instagram handle dedicated to defunct and dead golf course. I don't know the exact name of it, but it's out there. But recently, we've really gotten some very cool courses that have been built, and I'm all for it. Like, I'm all for it.
So, I mean, as a former member of a now defunct golf course, and actually, if you remember the course, the Garrison, which is the course I played before, that was the course where we had my bachelor party. That place is closed too.
Really?
Those are my two favorite courses in this area, which they're done. But I think probably what happened was golf got oversaturated.
Yep.
All the courses that could not financially sustain themselves, or courses that spent too much money to sustain themselves, folded. And now places that are doing well, like Pinehurst, like what's that other, the other one, the one in, it's not Kentucky. Yeah, whatever.
All those places
are doing well, so they're building, they're adding on.
Yeah, the Cabot brand is building everywhere, you know, Bandon's building everywhere. I mean, hell, even Pebble, which hardly has any land, just, you know, had Tiger Woods create the Hay, the nine hole, the par three course.
Right.
That's out there now, which is crazy. It's awesome. It's very, very cool. And you're right. Things were oversaturated. And in the early to late 90s to early 2000s, the building was out of control. But the problem was the golf courses sucked at the time. You know, if you look into golf courses that were built between 1990 and, say, 2005, like, those courses sucked for the most part. Like, I get it. There's some real nice big ones that are out there. But I'm talking about, like, your local semi-private that was built around a housing complex. Like, the ones that, like, the Gary Player or Jack Nicklaus Design Group just dropped in the middle of nowhere. Like, those courses really do suck. And usually they're not very playable. Usually they're cart path only. You know, it's like the model that just does not fit today's society. And so it's real cool to see these courses being built that are encouraged walking, that are super nice and still, I hate to say semi-reasonable, because some people out there are going to freaking fry me, because, you know, like, I think $250 for playing number four is, like, reasonable, you know? Do I want to pay that all the time? No. But for the experience that you get, yeah.
But you're also not paying that all the time.
No, that's right. That's right. Now, do I think Pebble's reasonable? No. I think Pebble's the biggest shill in the world. Like, I think that's a money laundering operation right there. Like, I got to stay at the hotel. I got to freaking take a caddy. Like, I'm paying $2,500 when it's all said and done. But people
hide behind paying for the name. It's not even the best course in its own neighborhood.
No. God damn, I'll take Cypress any day of the week over any course in the world, okay? Maybe not Tara Eady, but, like, Cypress is my dream course. You know, like, if someone's like, hey, you're going to die at the end of the 18th hole where you're playing, like, I'm not going anywhere except for Cypress Point, you know? But you're right. It's nuts. And people say, well, you know, it only costs like $750. I'm like, no, it doesn't, because you can't just get on, right? Like, you've got to stay at the hotel. Like, it's just, and sometimes they have, like, night minimums too, depending on the time of year. You can get banged for two nights and then have to pay the course, you know, as well, whatever it is, $750, $800 nowadays. Even like Kiwa, the ocean course is like $600 or $650 now. Pinehurst number two's
Shadow Creek's up to $1,000.
Up to $1,000. Yeah, it's just nuts. Like, there's, I'm sorry, like, and look, I'm the biggest Pinehurst homer in the world. Like, let's be real. I mean, you're not going to find anyone that extols the virtues of that area more than me. I mean, freaking look behind me. But I'm telling you what, like Pinehurst number two is a ripoff. All right. And believe me, like I love the people out there and they know that I've said this stuff, you know, on air. And for full transparency, every time I play, I don't pay. And it's amazing. But I got to tell you what, there's no way in the world I'd be able to take the boys out and pay $1,800 for the three of us to play Pinehurst number two. It's just not feasible. Is it world class? Yes. Is it worth $600? I mean, we could probably argue that all day long, but they definitely give you your money's worth. I'll tell you that. I don't know if it's $600 worth.
I will. When I played Shadow for $500, it was worth $500.
Right. Is it worth double that?
Because I mean, I had the only other money that I had to exchange was the caddy tip. Right. Everything else from transportation there,
right? Picked you up at the hotel.
Balls. Yep. Lunch. Anything I wanted while I was there was catered to as part of that $500. I don't know that that's the case now with $1,000. I'm not going back to find out.
Right. What do you think about that as a business model? Like as an all, you know how there's all inclusive resorts like Sandals and whatever those other things are. Like maybe that's something golf should look into. Is that hey, it costs you $100 to play this Muni, right? But all the food you want during the day that you're here, all the drinks that you want during the day that you're here, you can pay for. Like maybe that's a business. Maybe that's a great way to money launder, Scott.
It's like a scramble almost where, you know, they're giving you lunch and dinner and snacks at the turn and, you know, drink carts on the course and long drive contest and a closest to the little pin contest. You know, you shell out whatever, $150, $200 to be part of a foursome and, you know, your day is taken care of.
Well, we have come up with many wonderful ideas in this podcast that people have stolen or things that we let go by the wayside that we never follow through on. That might be one of them. So take that if you're out there and invite us. So, Scott, we are on the brink of Masters Week. You know, to me, Masters Week starts with the ANWA when they're at Augusta National, not in Champions Retreat, and the drive, chip, and putt. And then obviously, you know, Monday from the Masters stuff. I've been multiple times. I want to just go back on kind of some of Masters memories. You've got the hat on, you know, the subtitle, not a fan of pimento cheese. I love that. I do love pimento cheese, not as the sandwich itself. That's weird. To me, pimento cheese is like an added aside. I think one of the greatest things you can do at Augusta is take the chicken and the biscuit, buy a pimento cheese sandwich, scrape the pimento cheese off, put it on the chicken and biscuit, and voila, you have, you know, the leave the pin special, if you will.
Or you could just buy the chicken, or for lunch, buy the chicken, slap the chicken right on the pimento cheese sandwich.
Could do that. Essentially
have the same effect.
Yeah, I like the biscuit better than like the white.
Oh, I hear you there.
You know. So it's been 11 years now since you went. And I'm assuming most of those memories are kind of still fresh in your head. So what are some things that kind of stand out to you from your trip to Augusta?
I mean, the thing that will always be at the forefront of my mind is how much hillier it is in person than in appears on TV. That's always my first impression. My second impression was, I think if we found a weed on that course, it was the only one we would have found. That thing is immaculate. It looks like it's just green carpet and it's as far as the eye can see.
I tell you what, the day that we went, it was beyond picture perfect. I have been in much worse weather where you kind of do see a little bit of the dirty side of it, you know, mud and stuff like that. They use like that green kitty litter absorb stuff. But no matter what, when you see it on TV, you're getting the perfect camera angles, right? They know they've been doing it. You know, CBS has been there 50 plus years. Like they know exactly where to aim those to miss everything. But when you're on the scenes, you would think at some places that you would kind of, oh, there's a wart, you know, there's a weed, there's a scar that you can see on this perfected product, but it really is not there. Like it really is as good as you can imagine. And it's a cliche, and like with 4K and high def TVs nowadays, you do get a little idea of the topography, but the whole area around Augusta is flat. And then you've got this old peach orchard, you know, field that, that used to be a fruit farm that literally has, look, the course is great, right? But you can only have a great course in my mind when you have great topography as well that's not forced. And that topography there is not forced. It's natural, the way the land ebb and flows and just wraps around and through the pines, you know, through Ray's Creek and stuff. Yeah, and I'd agree 100% with you. Like, the way that the course unfolds in front of you is absolutely mind-blowing, and you have no idea how difficult it is to walk, especially if you're a caddy with like a 50-pound bag on your back up and down some of these hills.
Yeah, I mean, that again, and I mean, you sort of alluded to it, but like, just the fact that you can eat like a king there for like $15 for like an entire day.
Isn't it amazing how with how crazy inflation's been over the last 4 or 5 years that nothing has changed price-wise as far as food at Augusta? Now, I will tell you, things in the merch tent, the merch, well, now it's not a tent anymore, but the merch building, those have gone up in price. But the food is still the food. Like, you know, you still get the chicken and the biscuit for $2. Like, the drink is still $1.50. It's just, you know, I don't drink, but the beer is supposedly otherworldly cheap in great cups that you can take home, Scott, that I know you still have and I still have.
So I do still have. So I think they get $4 for a domestic beer and then $5 for an import or the Crow's Nest, which is their, like, I don't know, signature, like, brand new, obviously.
Okay.
So if you would apply that to, like, let's say Yankee Stadium prices,
right,
that same $4 beer would probably be at least 12, is my guess. I haven't been to Yankee Stadium in a while, but that's my guess, is you're looking at it over $10 for that same exact beer.
And that's wild. Like, I mean, that, you know, like, legitimately, I tell people all the time, and I've had people reach out, and actually had a guy on the pod who does an Instagram page called New Nine Golf, and he was doing this vignette series of, like, I'm trying to play Augusta National. And I told him, I said, dude, you can legit eat all day, like, from the time the gates open to the time the gates close for under $30, and literally not have to pinch a penny and be like, oh, I'm gonna get that but not that. No, you get it both, you get it all. You can sample it. You know, you can sample everything. I've seen guys walk out with armfuls, one of everything, and they set it up on the standing tables there in between the pines, and they're just like, you know, pigs and shit, just kind of eating a little bit of everything and tasting Augusta.
Why not? And that's so. My neighbor and I were talking about getting that, like, Taste of Augusta thing.
That's a ripoff. You want a money laundering thing? That is a ripoff.
So that ultimately is what we decided. I'm like, I can't justify spending $180 for this, where if we were actually there, this same amount of food would cost us less than half of that.
That's what's crazy. And quite honestly, like, you can legit make everything that Augusta has. There's no, like, secret recipe type stuff. Like, don't get twisted and think, like, this is, you know, 5-star diamond eating here. It's great Southern food. Like, it's home style Southern food, and it's cheap, but it's not otherworldly. Like, you can make the stuff just as cheap as you can buy it there. And for them, for the brand itself, like, an actual Masters brand, Augusta National, sell that stuff for that price is insane.
Well, I think the chicken sandwich is essentially just Chick-fil-A.
I don't think there's much difference. I don't think there's much difference in, like, mass-breaded, mass-produced chicken.
That's true.
Right? If you're not, like, dolling it up with spices and whatnot, you know? You can do, like there's, I saw a thing on a website once. It was, like, Augusta's secret menu. And it's not secret, but it's, like, what we talked about, putting the pimento cheese on the chicken and the biscuit. Like, little things like that.
Right.
You can do. And what's so nice, like, we bought pimento cheese sandwiches when we went to take a bite and literally throw it away. And I know, like, for some people, like the eco warriors out there, they're gonna be like, dude, like, you shouldn't have done that. Like, I get it, right? But it was like $1.50 to have a picture, you know what I mean? And to have that memory of biting into a pimento cheese sandwich.
Hold on, though, because that's now that you bring that up, that's another, like, that's a lasting memory, because what we did was we got those pimento sandwiches.
Right.
We sat in the grandstands between 11 and 12 and watched Gary Player play.
Yep. Yep.
So that's like, I mean, in terms of, like, if you're going to, like, do the Masters, like, those are three things that, like, it could not get much more quintessentially, like, Augusta than that.
Yeah. And, like, and
sat on Heyman Corner, watch Gary Player and eat pimento cheese and ate a pimento sandwich while that was going on.
And then 6 holes later, Gary Player called a little kid fat, punched me in my stomach, and told me that me doing push-ups is not good for my golf game. And all due respect, Mr. Player, you know I love you to death, even though you're an absolute lunatic in the best sense of the word, okay? But you are a fitness idol. I will tell you, push-ups have been pretty good for my golf game, dog. All right? They've been pretty good.
Dan's underselling that whole thing. He actually challenged Gary Player to a push-up contest. And Gary Player said, I don't do push-ups. I do sit-ups. Push-ups are bad for golf.
Yes. And then Gary Player told me, punch me in my stomach and see my abs. And I said, punch me in my stomach and see my abs. And then that's what happened. And that's
none of this is dramatized, by the way. It's exactly what happened.
No, it's yeah. I mean, we literally have pictures to prove it. Yeah, that was a trip and a half, Scott. That was an absolute trip and a half. And you know what's funny? And a little bit of a humble brag for people out there. That was the first of the 3 times I've been to the Masters. And that was the only time I had great weather.
Mm.
And you know, Augusta National has been on a run the last 4 or 5 years, some pretty crappy weather days. And I happened to hit them all.
Yeah, that is unfortunate.
And here's another thing, too. And people don't believe me. And you can vouch for this because you were there. But when you and I went, and we were there on a Monday?
It was Tuesday because it was Tuesday. The day before the par 3.
Thank you. That's right. So that's right. And that leads into my story. You're 100% correct. So Scott and I, my wife, are walking around across the back road over there to the par 3 course. And there's a, you know, a security guard. And we say, hey, we can walk over here, right? So yeah, go ahead. Scott and I, my wife, are walking the par 3 course, no ropes up whatsoever. As the Masters committee is cutting the cups and checking pin locations and the stimp readings for the next day for the par 3 contest. Nowadays, Scott, that entire area is roped off. You cannot get on the par 3. You can only walk the semi-perimeter, which then allows you to go up to the front of the clubhouse where you can get your picture taken. And when I was there last year, I was so disappointed because it was Lydon's first time down to Augusta National. And I said, man, you can walk the par 3 course. Like, it's great. Like, we're going to walk every hole. And you cannot get anywhere near it now.
I don't even think they had the tee boxes roped off. The greens, I think, were. But I'm pretty sure we walked on tee boxes.
not only did we walk on tee boxes, Scott, I know it's been 11 years. You have a better memory than me. But we walked on greens because I have pictures of you and I standing next to flags on the par 3 course. And I tell people that now, and they're like, dude, no way. I'm like, yes. Like, yes, dude. It is only within the last...
You're right. I remember taking that picture.
Yes. It is only within the last 5 or 6 years that they've really kind of hunkered down and made a lot of the areas that you and I and fans that have been there, I would say probably... pre-2020 used to be able to walk to. And now a lot of those areas are completely walled off. I mean, we walked right through the cabins there off of 10.
Oh, yeah. I mean, some of that they just have to keep the crowds under control. I get it, but at the same token, like, for someone like me, like, there's a good chance I'm never going back there.
Right.
I mean, I have a better chance of winning the real lotto than winning the ticket lotto, probably. Yeah. So, you know, it stinks that you can't, like, you know, you brought Lie there, like, you couldn't, you know, go all the places you had been previously.
I don't have an
entire new generation of people who won't get to experience the potential to vandalize a golf course that Jack Nicklaus was going to play the next day.
Yeah, I don't have numbers to prove this, and I granted have a very small sample size. I have a decade sample size to choose from. Three times out of the last decade I've been there. But I do feel like there's a lot more people that are allowed on the grounds now than there used to be. Like compared to our trip, which was a gorgeous day. I mean, you and I and my wife still hit areas of the course where we were the only three people.
Oh,
and we didn't search those areas out. We just kept walking. When we were there the last 2 years, I mean, it legit was wall to wall people. And again, like I was telling people I was with, like, oh, like, you know, right here, dude, like this is where, oh, there's 100 people right there. Oh, no, don't worry. We'll get behind the putting green over here. And the left side of 10 is wide open. No, it's not. There's 150 people over there. So it is different now.
Well, that grandstand between 11 and 12, if there were another three people there,
maybe, yeah,
you know, but again, like you said, at some point they're gonna have to let more people in,
yeah,
and there's a lot more like premium hospitality, yes, now too.
Yes, Beekman's Place, yeah, I know, Berkman's Place. Yeah, it's, well, just
there's other ones too. There's more accessible ones than that.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's still absurdly expensive, but.
Well, let me tell you this: like when we went there, you and I, like, we got there maybe an hour before the gates opened, and we were like first ones up. I mean, like Lie and I were there an hour and a half early. We might have been 2,000 people back. I mean, it's like talking to people like, oh, yeah, I've been here since 4 a.m. What?
Yeah, no, we were, I mean, again, I don't remember what time the gates opened. We were there early. And like you said, like we talked to whatever green jacket was that was manning the gate.
Yeah. 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 Everyone's all for like growing the game. I don't know, dude. I really think I want to shrink it. I want to shrink it back to the way it was. Maybe that's like an old curmudgeon, right? Like maybe that's old guy yelling at clouds or whatnot, but
I think it depends on like how the course is set up and like how it controls the flow of people.
Right.
So the best example I can give is the Travelers Championship. When I started going to the Travelers Championship, which predates the Augusta trip. So we're talking like probably like 2010, let's say.
Yeah.
It was on a Sunday, fairly quiet compared to what Thursday was like the last time I went.
Yeah. And I like that. Like I love small pro events. I think that's why I love like the KFT tour, the LPGA, because it makes you feel like you're so much closer to the action instead of like, I mean, how many times have we seen Tiger Woods live play? A ton, more than we can count. But how many times have you watched every shot of Tiger? No, you can't. Like physically couldn't do it, whether it was at a small event or a major. Like you watch a hole and then you got to get a hole ahead just to see him come in. It's
well, and again, like the majors, and I'll go to Beth Page. Think about how familiar you and I are with the grounds of Beth Page State Park.
Yes. Yes.
The last time I was there for the PGA Championship, they dropped me off on a bus. I had no idea where I was in relation to anything.
Yeah.
Like it took me a while to get my bearings. And then once you kind of do, even that, it's completely different from what you remember.
It's like the old saying.
There's that like one water fountain by the red course.
Yes. Yes.
You filled up your water bottle there a million times.
Like, Scott, I haven't been back 20 years, and I remember it.
Yeah, it was 10 feet below the level they had us walking on.
Yeah, it's nuts. Like, I'll jump on that same train of thought. Pinehurst completely demolished their driving range. They leveled it. Like, it had sand traps and flash face bunkers and tall wispy grass. They demolished their driving range to put up corporate hospitality tents. They've run electric through it. They've run water through it. They've run, you know, everything through it. HVAC, because they're going to be hosting the U.S. Open every 8 years or so now. It's nuts.
Exactly. And so going back to Augusta, like, they built all that infrastructure because it's the only other thing that goes on there is
right
the two golf tournaments. So they know they're going to need it. With some of that brings the, oh, well, now we can get more people in efficiently or whatever. But just because you're getting more people in doesn't mean what you're doing is enhancing the fan experience. It's just adding to the amount of fans that are there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, like, the PGA Tour is one of those things Jay Monahan always talks about, shareholders and whatever. And, you know, fans really should be the biggest shareholders, but they're always the one left holding the stick and they're always the one mentioned last. You know, it's just about corporate money nowadays, which is cool. Like, I completely understand and get it, but it also doesn't mean that I can't pine for the days when I had free reign at Augusta National.
Same.
You got any favorites for the Masters, Scott? I know we really don't care. Like, I don't care, but I know we don't do any research, but I'll tell you what, Scott, I did a little bit of research for this. I think I'm going to amaze you with some of the research I've done.
Go for it.
I'm not saying that I'm going to pick a winner, right? But maybe I will. Who knows? There's been a lot of talk. Obviously, Scottie Scheffler is playing great, right? And Rory McIlroy tells Scottie Scheffler, hey, dude, you should probably use a mallet putter because you actually suck at putting. Scottie Scheffler's like, well, I do suck at putting, so maybe I'll try the mallet, even though really there's a hitch in his swing, kind of like Willis Zalatoris has, and it's not just the mallet, but, you know, mindset being what it is, Scottie Scheffler thinks he's a better putter now that he has a mallet, so maybe he's a better putter, okay? With all that being said, at Augusta National, I'm going to blow some people's minds here because I don't care about putting. I think putting's irrelevant at Augusta National. I said this on the Fairways and Dreams podcast, is the fact that Augusta is so difficult to putt at that it brings everyone down to the same level. What becomes then important? Shot accuracy, strokes gained, approach. So,
oh, definitely.
100% there. You know for a fact that it's a second shot course. Everybody does. I mean, you and I could probably hit 10 fairways at Augusta or at least hit 10 tee shots and not be in trouble.
Probably. So, it's fairly open. So,
on 7 of 14 holes, okay, this is the 14 holes being all the par fours and par fives, 50% of those. There's less than 10% birdie difference between people that hit the fairway or miss the fairway. So you can make birdie from everywhere. You can make par from everywhere. Now, there's some holes where that does become a problem. Hole number one, for instance, you miss left, you have a chance of making par. You miss right, your chances for par basically become almost nil. Since 2010, Scott, all top 10 players every single year, every person that finished 1 through T10 since 2010, averaged 9.6%. Averaged 9.6 fairways hit. Okay, that's per round. So every player in the top 10 in the last 13 years has averaged 9.6 fairways hit. Every single other player, from missing the cut to finishing in 11th place, hit 9.5 fairways. How's that for a stat?
Interesting. I wonder what it is for like a regular tour event.
I wonder what it is for
the U.S. Open.
Now, that's a great point. See, there is a tournament where there's a premium on hitting the fairways. And then also what I thought about as well, even though most Open Championship courses or links link courses, right, where you can get away with hitting it, there are some that you need to be in the fairway because of the angle of attack into greens and the gorse that grows and all those, you know, wispy grass and stuff like that. So I think it depends on the course, but Augusta is such an interesting case study because, like you mentioned before, it's the same place year after year after year. And why is it such that rookies typically don't do well? Because they don't have any of that pedigree behind them. They don't have any of that history of knowing the course and walking in and playing and playing and playing it. It's the same thing for people that don't have traveling handicaps. You play great at your home course. Mm-hmm. Why? Because you know exactly what shot to hit before you even hit it, and you know where to miss. And then you travel and you play three different courses in three different states on three different types of grass, and your handicap's 10 strokes higher because you have no idea what the hell you're doing out there.
So I'll even go take it a step further, is that the way that the course is set up, it's almost intentionally set up to not punish you too severely if you miss. And I'll even give you, I'll take it the next step further.
Okay.
I think almost they want that. They want someone to make some crazy shot off the pine straw.
I agree with that 100%. It's the reason why they went to the, you know, there's no more graduated, there's no more rough, like there's no first, second cut, right? But the second cut is so playable. Like the second cut is literally what you play at your fairway, you know, at like your local course. Like that's what the second cut is, Augusta. And it does. And the thing is, what's funny too, is it leads right into the pine straw. But you want to talk about the difference between like pine straw at my course under a pine tree as opposed to Augusta National. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not even the same world. Not even the same universe.
No, and that's what I'm saying is like they want that like TV moment. They want, you know, Phil hitting through like a, you know, 3-foot window. They want Bubba parting the Red Sea and some crazy, I guess it's a draw for him.
It is
out of the pine straw. They want Tiger missing the green on 16 and chipping in. All those things. That's their like moments.
And what have we learned over the last 30 plus years of watching golf? Whatever the Masters wants, Scott, the Masters gets.
Exactly. So your point is definitely relevant. I think they set that course up so that you can miss the tee, you can miss the fairway off the tee, and you'll still be fine because they want that second shot.
Yep. And I'm going to give you this too. 5 of the last 7 Masters champs were top 5 in strokes gained approach. So don't ever come at me and tell me that the best putters are going to win at Augusta, because everybody is a great putter on tour, and putting is cyclical. And it's, you know, when you get hot, you get hot. You need to hit greens and you need to miss on the appropriate sides of green complexes.
I'll give you the perfect sort of justification for what you just said. I'll give you 2 words. Adam Scott.
Bang, bang.
Not anywhere near a good putter.
No.
Won the Masters with a long putter.
No.
Which is the last bastion of the bad putter.
That is. Scott, is Tiger going to make the cut? Tiger's not making the cut, right? Tell me now so I don't get my hopes up. Just tell me, Scott.
The problem is what you just said is that the Augusta, if you can course manage your way around Augusta, you can put a round together. And just in terms of course knowledge, is there anyone else going out there who you have more confidence in to be able to course manage themselves to making the cut?
No, not a single soul. Not a single soul. And I'll tell you what, if it's 65 degrees, 70 degrees, I think maybe he makes the cut. If it's anything less, you know, he's going to withdraw because he's got the flu or his allergies are bad or something hurts.
Maybe.
Let's get out of here on this, Scott. How come no one's talking about Anthony Kim's nose?
You sent me a picture earlier.
Yeah, let's not get into what I put on.
No. I don't know what's going on there.
How come Scott, nobody is talking about the fact that Anthony Kim doesn't even look like Anthony Kim? Like, I get it's been 12 years since we've seen him. A decade is a long time. But Scott, guess what? If I showed you a picture of me 10 years ago and a picture of me now, guess what? Same person, dude.
he literally, Scott, doesn't even look like Anthony Kim, which leads me to believe, Scott, and this how about this? A little hold conspiracy on, theory.
Oh, go ahead. Like the conspiracy, like town music?
Maybe we can add that into the episode. I'm not so familiar with this platform yet.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. But
the flat earthers out there might enjoy this. Scott, what if it's not Anthony Kim? And they botch this facial reconstruction to kind of make it look like Anthony Kim, and his nostrils collapse and his face is crooked. And
so you're assuming then that this is the Liv people scamming us.
Yeah, Scott, look, Liv money can do a lot of things. You can do a lot.
That's not the way to go. That's not what I think. I think this is just some random guy who maybe
scamming Liv.
Maybe his name really is Anthony Kim. He learned how to play golf at like a decently high level. And he's just like, yeah, I'm Anthony Kim. I'll play. So like the real Anthony Kim is like, just like holed up in California somewhere, doing whatever he does, counting his insurance money. And all of a sudden, Anthony Kim is playing Liv golf, and he couldn't be happier because now he just gets to be more of a recluse than he already was.
Will the real Anthony Kim please stand up?
So that's what I'm going with. I'm just going with this is just some other dude who just is collecting Anthony Kim's Liv money.
I love that, and I think I'm going to start telling people that. I need to superimpose that picture with next to the caption that I told you about on that, because it's literally one in the same. We can't say that on the air or show it. Maybe
come
on at some point in time. But Scott, yeah, it's amazing. Like Faraday was asking him questions, and I guess Anthony said that he's going to be participating in a documentary about his life and his career. That's something I'd be super interested in. I was an enormous Anthony Kim fan back in the day, but I'll tell you what, man, if that is what hard living and drugs and drinking and gambling and staying up till all hours of the night does to you, like, man, maybe he should go into like a scared straight program for kids and just be like, dude, you want to end up looking like me? Here's the lifestyle you got to lead. Because Scott, look, man, John Daly looks better than Anthony Kim. Like John Daly looks more John Daly than Anthony Kim looks Anthony Kim.
And if you don't believe it, Dan, you can find John Daly at the Waffle House across the street from Augusta National.
Not the Waffle House, Scott. It's the Hooters.
Ah, true.
He is holed up out there. You can drive right on Washington's road and see him. Oh, what an American icon, John Daly. Scott, let's thank our sponsors real quick. Big Wings Golf. Go check them out, bigwingsgolf.com. Go check out swanniesgolf.com, Rough Dude Rangefinders. Check all them out. Shout out to our friends, Gas House Golf. And everyone else out there that supports us. Shout out Dead Golf Company, who's been creating some really, really cool stuff as of late as well. You'll hear the ads run at the end of this episode as well. Scott, anything on your mind to finish the podcast with?
Nah, just get busy looting or get busy golfing.
Get busy looting or get busy money laundering?
Sounds good.
See ya.
Be good.